Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The committee can come to order. Welcome, everyone. Members, since we do have a quorum and the chair is forgetful about approving minutes, if we can go back, want to look in your packet for the February 23rd minutes. Is someone who'd like to move approval?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move the February 23rd minutes.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The March 2nd minutes. Anyone wants to spend a little time reviewing Friday's minutes?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benson.
I will move the March 2nd, 2007 minutes.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. Representative Mahoney. Welcome to the Labor and Consumer Protection Division.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a sneaky suspicion I'll be in front of your committee a few times this year.
We're looking forward to it. The chair will move.
Oh, he's an honor.
I'm not. I'm just going to let that slide. The chair moves House File 740 to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Representative Mahoney, you have a 0151 amendment?
If I might, I'd like to do an oral amendment first.
Certainly.
The crack staff here at the House brought to my attention that on page 1, line 6, in the section 1, after the word sales, the word on should be changed to of.
Can you repeat that, please, Representative Mahoney?
I sure can. On line 1, I'm sorry, page 1, line 6, after the word sales, delete on and insert of.
All right.
And then we can go to the other amendments. But that was the simplest one, and I always like to take the advice of staff if possible first.
Yeah, we appreciate it when you do, Representative Mahoney. The chair moves. Amendment as reviewed by Representative Mahoney. Page 1, line 6, section 6, delete on and insert of. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, there is the A070151 amendment. Page 1. Disaster, meaning given in section 12.03, subdivision 2, and emergency has the meaning given in section 12.03, subdivision 3, and then number and letter accordingly. What this does is define what disaster and define what emergency means as the to use the definition already in law. That gives it a little bit more structure to the particular what we're talking about. Otherwise, anyone could declare a disaster, anyone could define a disaster, and I'm sorry, but the judges are delightful people, but don't need to overwork them as we go along.
All right. The chair will move the 0151 amendments. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, to your bill as amended, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment, this bill, and there's a third amendment in there, and we can do that one, or I can explain the bill as you'd like.
This is your amendment, sir?
Yes.
All right, well, then let's just keep plugging along. Members, there's no number for this amendment. It's on a business-size piece of paper. Moves to amend House File 740 as follows at the top. Just want to make sure everyone has it before we...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative House.
Can we call it the A3 amendment?
It's a deal. The A3 amendment, ladies and gentlemen. The chair moves the A3 amendment. Representative Mahoney, do you want to review it for us?
I certainly can. I'll give you a little bit of the history. This bill has... created some controversy, and I had people in my office all last week. And this, although is not a final version of what this bill will end up, I'm sure, because it, There's already a scheduled meeting for Wednesday in my office on this particular bill. But this brings it into a little bit more acceptable, but not much more apparently to some, but at least it's what I'm willing to give at the moment. I will go over it. Page 1, line 7, delete the word unconscionable. Page 1, line 17, delete unconscionable. Page 1, line 19, delete the I. Page 1, line 21 and 22, delete the price at which the same or similar goods or service is readily obtainable by other purchasers in the trade area. Page 1, line 23, delete substantially. Page 1, line 24, after the word sellers, insert usual and customary. Page 1, line 24, after the word profit, insert the word margin. And then page 2, line 3, delete unconsciously. And I'll repeat that. And page 2, line 3, delete unconsciously. On page 2, after line 10, insert subdivision 5. This section does not supersede section 325D.71, which is the minimum pricing for gasoline. 8 cents a gallon minimum price, minimum profit, which is keeps our small gas stations in
gasoline.
And keeps where I buy gas from yelling at me every morning, which is important.
Any questions or comments to Representative Mahoney's A3 amendment? With that, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair,
are we done with amendments, Representative
Mahoney? We are
Mahoney.
Done with amendments. I wish to express my thank you for bearing with me on this. This is a bill that, again, as I said, created more controversy than expected, although I think it could have passed without any changes, without any question. People have been pretty, other members have been pretty excited about this bill. But this bill, we in the state of Minnesota have no law that allows the state or any local official to go after someone who's price gouging. I'm trying to create a minimum standard, and of all the parts of my amendments, the one that I and changes the bill the most is the one that deletes the price at which the same or similar goods on page 1, line 21 and 22. What I'm trying to do is create it. I know it's odd, but I'm trying to have a gentle touch here. I think the Attorney General should have one shot at having a conversation with someone who is price gouging. And if that message doesn't get out to our businesses, then we can come back and make it a little bit tougher. But this bill tries to keep as light of a touch as possible. And it gives the Attorney General a chance to go after these people. There is penalties in this, so it will have to go to, after it goes to Commerce, hopefully this week it will have to go to Public Safety Policy, because it has on the second page, 2, 4, and 5, has a $10,000 fine, which is pretty substantial. That's what it does, Mr. Chair. And I stand ready for questions. I'm sure there's people that would, the Attorney General's office has is ready to answer any questions. And I know there are some people who would like to testify against it.
Right, looks like we've got a question for the author. Representative Swale.
I just would like to thank you for this bill. I live in Woodbury, and right now we are having a lot of problems with our water quality out there, and we are starting to see advertisements from all kinds of fly-by-night people versus some reputable people that provide water filtering systems. There, we're seeing a lot of pressure on our community to be purchasing these. They're not very reputable, some of them. And there's also an increase in price and testing, all kinds of things that are out there. So anything that we can do right now for, I mean, this may not be a crisis on other people's playbook, but it certainly is in my community. So I think this is helpful, and I hope that we're able to move this forward. Thank you very much for bringing it.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you. To the author, in addressing the comments that were just made, I guess one of my concerns is what's going to constitute when the Attorney General's office weighs in. I mean, what I'm just hearing is normal trade and business, and if the Attorney General's office is going to start weighing in on things like that, we've got a whole lot of issues that are not dealt with in what would be going to constitute an emergency. So at some point, how do we constitute an emergency that allows the Attorney General's office to start weighing in on Congress?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Peterson, that was the focus of the first of the Second Amendment, where we define disaster and emergency by law. So that, you know, I don't have the law book in front of me, but primarily disasters and emergencies are declared by the governor. And that's where we were going with this. Now, that's also why I left. I gave the Attorney General one bite at the apple, and you know, I left my reading glasses on the table. I believe it's starting at line 18 on page 1, where the amount charged represents a gross disparity. And where this grew out of, and the explanation is very plausible. But where this grew out of is the 9/11 disaster, when you had some gas stations that were charging $5 and $6 a gallon. Now, my understanding, after some investigation, this was just a business person doing something that they probably should have thought more of. They were trying to keep people from showing up at their service station, but it created some. It created a lot of concern and a lot of fear for people. And, you know, you can't legislate against fear and stupidity most of the time. It doesn't work. But what this does is gives the Attorney General the opportunity to show up and say that's, you know, if somebody is doing that without a plausible reason, you're wrong and you're breaking the law. So hopefully, the Attorney General carries a big stick and doesn't have to really use that iron fist.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you for the explanation, but it does require the governor's office to establish a standard. Number one, and number two. I think the last disaster that I can think of in Minnesota, was that the floods up in Fargo and West Moorhead and the Red River? And were there any examples up there of one neighbor gouging another neighbor?
I don't recall up the Attorney General's office, but I, just to be clear, I believe when the governor, with this language in the bill, when the governor declares a disaster area, if a tornado or a flood or whatever, that would come underneath this bill. So as to an example of Grand Forks or any place in a tornado, I don't have one. I don't have an example to give you. If I could call up the Attorney General's office to make sure that I didn't just make a big faux pas, but I believe that it, this bill comes into effect when the governor declares it an emergency or a disaster. Ms. Olson.
Good morning, Ms. Olson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify your tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Kristen Olson. I'm an assistant attorney general at the Minnesota Attorney General's office. As you explained, the definitions of disaster and emergency are called in from existing law, and not only does there have to be a disaster or emergency, but that has to result in an abnormal market disruption. But those terms are defined in existing law. I don't know, I don't have the statute book with me, but does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
I guess what I'm looking for is it comply with when the governor declares an area, a district, a disaster? Is that the threshold for your office to go to work?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's defined as any change in the market resulting from a disaster or emergency or an event resulting from the declaration of a state of emergency by the governor or president.
Ms. Olson, do you have other testimony you wish to present this morning?
I do have a short statement.
Go ahead.
Ms. Olson.
As you may know, the Attorney General's office was flooded with complaints about gas stations charging up to $5 a gallon for gasoline after 9/11. And most often, price gouging does occur during disasters and emergency situations. I distributed a packet that contains some examples of price gouging from around the country. For example, in January of this year, there were hundreds of reports of price gouging in Missouri and Oklahoma after severe ice storms. And those involved sales of things like gas, hotel and motel rooms, generators, water, and food. In Florida, there were over 4,000 complaints of price gouging during the 2005 hurricane season. As Representative Mahoney explained, price gouging is not illegal unless there is an anti-price gouging statute in place that prohibits it. And here in Minnesota, we don't have such a statute. So that if a disaster or emergency occurred here in the future, there would be nothing to prevent an unscrupulous business from charging an exorbitant price to a consumer. Currently, 31 states plus the District of Columbia have anti-price gouging laws in place, and about half of those states passed the laws since 9/11. I'm aware of four other state legislatures that are considering price gouging bills this year. And we believe Minnesota should join the majority of states that prohibit price gouging. This price gouging ban, again, would only be triggered in disasters and emergency situations, and it would only apply to essential goods and services, things like food, water, health care, lodging, gas, and fuel. It is important to recognize that under the bill, a seller is permitted to pass on any additional costs that they've incurred onto consumers. So if the seller's actual cost of doing business has increased, they can pass that cost along and they won't be violating the law. And they can also make their customary profit and they're not violating the law. But under House File 740, what a business won't be able to do is take advantage of a bad situation by charging an exorbitant price for the things that people need just to survive. The definition of price gouging in the bill is straightforward. Again, it's price gouging if the price charged during the emergency or disaster reflects a gross disparity from the price that was charged before the disaster. This is the approach that most of the states have taken, a majority of states with price gouging laws. And it covers those egregious situations where a seller is not just passing on an additional cost, they're not just making their usual profit, but they're marking up the price, they're unscrupulously and unjustifiably raising the prices to take advantage of the crisis. During times of crisis, consumers shouldn't have to worry about being taken advantage of, and under House File 740, they won't have to.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Mm-hmm. Questions for the testifier? Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Ms. Olson, you heard Representative Swales. Concern about water filters. Would this law rise to the fact that the governor would declare Woodbury a disaster area because of the water, and would she get relief?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, it doesn't appear from the facts that I have that this would rise to a situation of a disaster emergency under this bill, but presumably if it rose to that situation where the governor did declare it to be a disaster for that area, law could be triggered.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to feel assured that in the Attorney General's tenure in office that there are no plans to maybe change the definition of an emergency under this law if it becomes passed.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, I'm not aware of any such plan by the Attorney General's office. They're intended to address those situations where it's really a dire emergency, things like usually they're weather-related disasters.
Representative House?
That's good enough, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Mr. Hesse, are you wanting to testify? Thank you, Ms. Olson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And the Minnesota Chamber opposes this legislation for one simple reason, and I think it seems to invite litigation over things like what is a gross disparity between the price before and after an event. I think with the amendment, the second amendment that was offered, you cleaned up the one of other pieces where there might be litigation concerns by eliminating the word substantially. But there's still, I think, a concern from our point of view that this legislation could be used for significant litigation towards our members. And generally because no one knows what the term, what's a gross disparity means. What it means a different thing to one person versus probably the Attorney General's office. And as some of the information that was passed out from the Attorney General's office shows, but the similar Florida law resulted in almost 9,000 calls to a hotline because in people's minds, you know, any increase in price could, you know, might be perceived to be a violation of the law. So to me, this is could be a waste of resources for the Attorney General's office and staff if they are faced with investigating significant numbers of calls in the public's view that are examples of perceived price gouging. But maybe more philosophically, this bill is contrary really to the laws of supply and demand. When events like that are covered by this bill occur, prices are really important. When prices increase or prices decrease because supply and demand change, that's a signal to consumers, and it really price signals are meant to facilitate the allocation of resources to those who need the products the most. So price gouging really gets in the way of this the pricing mechanism and says price gouging statutes and produces or places greater uncertainty into businesses that are covered by the law. One thing that many economists think about these types of statutes is that when a business faces more uncertainty, generally their investors and shareholders demand more returns, which in effect leads to higher prices on average with when there is no emergency or a disaster. So it just raises prices generally throughout the economy. And in one example, and I can produce the article that Ed Lauterman from who's frequently in the Pioneer Press, when he analyzed these price gouging laws, said that the solution here is often far more harmful than the problem. So, I just want you to think about the prices do matter in the economy, and when prices do increase because there's a supply shortage, that really is meant to allocate scarce resources to those who need the products the most. And we shouldn't stop that price adjustment from occurring because it really does work. Finally, if you decide to move forward with this legislation, I encourage you to add some language similar to what Wisconsin did, and that allows for a warning notice to be issued that specifies any action that the seller has to take to avoid being found in violation of the law. It seems to me that since it could be very subjective on when a violation, when something is price gouging, that you at least should allow an out where there's an opportunity to adjust a price if in the view of the Attorney General's office they believe it's price gouging. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if the witness could answer this question or Mahoney, or we might have to bring the Attorney General's office back. But say Representative Junkie was unfortunate enough to have a disaster, a tornado, go through Wilmer. And Representative Mahoney wasn't pipe fitting anymore. He was a general contractor and wanted to go down there and help. But the supply for sheeting in the state of Minnesota was just, it was exhausted. And normally $9 a sheet, and we've got to get it from Wyoming. Now we're paying $29 to $49 a sheet. Would that be a substantial price gouge?
Who wants to take a swing at that one? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hall. That should hopefully have been taken care of with the A3 amendment, which stated you would be able to maintain your usual profit margin. Because as a general contractor, if that person is honest and understand business much, that person will set a profit margin, whether it's 1% or 100%, and try to stick with it because they have a business plan. Certainly there are times when that will move up and down a little bit. So if it's coming at $29 a sheet from Wyoming, and I normally make a dollar a sheet, I'm going to make it at $30 a sheet and maintain my profit margin. There may be other things coming into it, and that would also be with the with labor and transportation costs, but they should be passed on. As you say, you know, commodities move to where they need to be because of price and because of need. But that doesn't mean that someone should be able to gouge someone. If it's coming from Wyoming and I maintain my one or whatever percentage profit I normally maintain, I should have no worry about it.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, I know we often don't like to create scenarios or what ifs, but I'm just tempted. If Representative Gunther's grocery store was in Wilmer and he had Representative Mahoney do some repair, board up the windows and the doors, maybe some roof work, and Representative Gunther had bought some sheathing the day before in the local lumber yard, and now Representative Mahoney is charging him this substantially higher price, and Representative Gunther calls the Better Business Bureau, the Attorney General's office, and wants an investigation. Does this in fact trigger an investigation, and are we actually going to cost the state more money by having an investigation where in fact it's probably just because of supply and demand and the fact that we can't get the material?
Representative Mahoney.
Well, knowing the businessman that Representative Gunther is, he'd probably sell it to me to put it onto his own windows, and he'd make unconscionable profit. But I would hope that it would trigger, if somebody did that to any grocer or homeowner, that would trigger some sort of an investigation. An investigation can be as easy as a phone call, or as full-blown as a half a dozen investigators out tracking down whatever. That's our responsibility as a state, to make sure that people don't get harmed by unscrupulous players.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying real hard to support Representative Mahoney and vote for this bill, and I probably will, but it appears he just needs a little bit of work in cleaning up during the process, and I would hope that he'd do that.
Are we back to your percentages, Representative House?
I'm about 97% of
them. All right. Good. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Even one, the author or the witness, is this, how does this bill compare with the predatory pricing laws that we have? Certainly, predatory pricing is opposite of gouging. Predatory pricing means that someone like your favorite retailer, I won't mention them, I don't think they deserve it, would be able to sell gasoline for 12% under cost and put the small gas station out of business, or be able to sell bread for a dime a loaf and be able to pit, just, you know, wouldn't be anything to this big retailer we're talking about. When you look at our predatory pricing laws, there's something that we aren't probably enforcing through the Attorney General or anybody else, and compare that with this bill, how does it compare?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, the amendment, the A3 amendment, the last line stated that this does not supersede the predatory pricing on gasoline. I don't know that the state has a predatory pricing on anything else at this particular time that I'm aware of. Now, I may be wrong, and if the Attorney General's office has anything to add or Mr. Hesse has anything to add, I'd certainly welcome that. But at this particular time, this bill does not allow for, this does not supersede the predatory pricing law on gasoline.
Representative Gunther.
Does this bill only apply to gasoline?
Representative Mahoney.
That amendment only, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, that the amendment, the A3 amendment, only pertains to gasoline. It does not pertain to the other goods and services as stated on line 13, first page, essential consumer goods and services. This would be gouging on other essential services as mentioned in the bill, which are necessary for health, safety, and the welfare of the public, including without limitations, food, water, fuel, gas, gasoline, shelter, transportation, healthcare services, pharmaceutical, and medical supply. So I've been hearing from many aspects of business in the state.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. I remember as a small grocer compared to the big guys that I had competing with me, one of them is like the fifth largest retailer in the nation, certainly the first or second in Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin. They would start a bread war. Not only did they give bread away, they gave you a bottle of shampoo if you took it. as a small town retailer, that was pretty hard to match. And they say bread's still the staff of life. So, you know, when you take bread and milk away and you are out of shape and somebody's got to go buy bread and milk somewhere else, they aren't going to buy your hamburger either. So, predatory pricing, there's nobody came to my relief. I think predatory pricing is one of the laws that we totally ignore in this state. And I think there is a definite relationship with your bill and predatory pricing, and I don't think it's a favorable one.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hesse, you mentioned that the free market is the best mechanism for distributing goods and services, and I agree with that. But do you not agree with me that during times of a national disaster, wars, or invasion, there have been more than enough examples in history in which the market does not work?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I guess I'd need an example from you to know specifically what you're referring to.
Let's take careful. He was a history teacher, Representative Benson. So, the bad placement is the worst kind.
Someone, Mr. Chairman, someone had to do it,
and you did it well by all reports, Representative Benson.
Mr. Hesse, for example, during the Civil War, when the Confederacy was in its last legs, there was tremendous inflationary pressures because of shortage of resources, partly because the Union forces were denying the Confederate armies, for example, food, even the civilian populations. Now, during that time, the free market obviously was not working. We had inflationary increases of 3, 4, 5, 6,000%. Under a circumstance like that, you wouldn't consider the free market to be operating, would you?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I guess I have no way to answer that. Certainly I wasn't around in the Civil War.
I was. I was there.
You know, I can speak to things, situations, you know, where I have firsthand knowledge, but and, you know, in situations in disasters and emergencies that have been declared in the recent past, I think for the most part the market has done a good job of adjusting prices and allocating resources.
Representative Benson.
I would agree with that, but I also own insurance on my car and my house and my life insurance. I hope I will not have to cash in, or my wife will not have to cash in my life insurance anytime soon. But don't you think it's a wise policy to prepare for possible future difficulties such as a national disaster? And doesn't this bill, in fact, try to adjust or address that problem?
Mr. Hesse, moving from the 19th century to the 21st.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I guess I still don't see where having the Attorney General's office litigate with and investigate a variety of businesses over what could be just a misperception on the public's part about how prices are set really yields a good result.
Just one last, just a statement. You had mentioned, Mr. Hesse, that the free market does allocate resources to those who need it most. In many cases, that is true. But in a national disaster, doesn't it allocate resources and services to those who have the most resources to purchase those goods and services? And isn't that the nub of the issue that this particular bill is trying to address?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, not necessarily. If you, for example, the fuel has been brought up several times during this debate. When you think about it, if I'm just driving to and from work, is that a necessity for me? I could access public transportation if I desire, so I would not necessarily have to purchase fuel for my own consumption. I could rely on the public transportation system, who would have a certainly more resources, but and more need for the fuel. So the pricing mechanism says to me, am I willing to buy fuel at a certain price? Maybe the answer to that, many people might be no, I'll take public transportation instead, where it can then allocate the fuel to the public transportation and other systems that really need it the most.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I have a question for Mr. Hesse as well. Given the fact that there's 31 states that have passed this and four more that are considering them, do you know of any dire consequences that have come from passing this, other than the one that you mentioned, which was the 9,000 complaints, and we all know what, Hurricane Katrina and those kinds of problems. Do you know of any other instances that these 31 states have experienced that we may look to down the road?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi. No, I really just started doing some research on this legislation over the weekend, so I haven't had a chance to talk to any of my counterparts in other states, but I do plan to do that.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was exactly that of Representative Scalzi's.
Efficiency. Excellent. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Benson, I love history also, so we have a lot of things in common, even though I live in Greater Minnesota and you don't.
I grew up in Greater Minnesota and milk cows, so.
I can believe that with a name like yours. But anyway, looking back in history, there was a mechanism that we used to prevent maybe gouging, maybe for national interests. It's certainly during World War II, they had gas rationing in the form of gas tabs. I remember when my father opened our grocery store in 1946, and there was still, in order to buy sugar, you had to have little
coupons.
Coupon. Mm-hmm. And my dad was really lucky; he found somebody that had extra sugar, and we'd have fall. But those are ways that we ration things.
Sure.
We didn't need a gouging law to do that. Mm-hmm. Certainly. It was a very, very important thing that we had to do for the war effort.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Hesse brought up a point, the notice of pending violation, and that's something I'm certainly willing to look at between now and the next committee stop, and as I said, this has a couple more stops to make. And having been made aware of that, and I appreciate that, conversations with the Attorney General's office about how are we planning on making businesses aware of this particular law that's coming into effect, if it passes and gets signed, and how they make businesses aware of it. Larger companies have more lawyers than they know what to do with, and they'll be fine, but it's the smaller businesses that make an honest mistake, and they shouldn't be prosecuted for an honest mistake. They should be made aware of the problem and educated rather than be subject to prosecution. That's you know, we pass laws here, we hopefully, and with criminal penalties, we don't want to see them ever used. We prefer to educate people. And most people are honest.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against this bill? Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Diane Coble, and I represent Flint Hills Resources. Our company is an independent refining company located right outside the Twin Cities in Rosemont. And I just wanted to talk. I have had an opportunity to talk briefly with the author, and we're hoping to get together to talk through some of the other issues, and hopefully we can continue to work on this piece of legislation. What I wanted to just talk to a little bit today is some of the unintended consequences that can sometimes happen as a result of legislation such as this. First and foremost, I think Mr. Hesse discussed litigation and just the investigation. I think when companies are very interested in compliance, when we don't have very clear terminology, I think one of the unintended consequences is people fail to act. And we're seeing this. I get to Representative Scalzi's question just a minute ago. There's, since these laws have been passing, there's been a certain amount of uncertainty. In Oklahoma, for example, where they do have a piece of legislation on the books, our company is no longer selling fuel in that particular jurisdiction because we cannot get ourselves comfortable that we would not be in violation. And even though other companies are doing it, you're basically disrupting the market because as a market participant, because of the legislation, we are not participating in that market, which just means there isn't as much competition. And so that's one of the unintended consequences of legislation like this, unless it's very tightly drafted. You talk about states that do have legislation that works a little bit better. One example is in North Carolina, where there's actually a mechanism that puts in that deals with commodity pricing and some of the different changes in market fluctuations as a result of that. We did offer some amendatory language to the author and the Attorney General's office. We're hoping we can continue to discuss that because I think it would help in some of those instances. I think basically what this type of legislation does is serve as a cap on prices. And when you cap prices, what that means and what we saw in the 1970s is that while you may have lower prices, you don't have supply. What really ends up happening is that basic signals in the market structure is that where the prices go up many times, it's the signal that we need fuel. Example, Katrina. What that did is it sent signals to other parts of the world and to other states that particular jurisdiction needed fuel. So the prices went up temporarily to signal to other markets for the fuel to come. As a result, with 30% of their refining capacity wrecked as a result of the hurricane, they were still resupplied, and they were supplied very effectively without any need for government intervention. The market system worked very well in that particular instance. Markets generally are very efficient when the prices can move freely and signal supply. For example, we have, over the course of time, just generally, when we're having a high market demand in our state and the prices go up a little bit, that signals to other refiners in other parts of the country to bring in supply so that we can keep the prices down. What happens when you get the supply there is it moderates the price. And so some of the things that we need to worry about in this legislation as it moves forward is that we are not somehow creating more difficulty for consumers as a result of this type of legislation. And as I mentioned, the amendment that we're talking about has a specific need in commodities markets. Commodities markets don't deal just with the fact that the price of refining would happen to go up in cost for that day. It has to do with what you can buy or sell in the marketplace. And that pricing is quite a bit differently. And one thing I need to mention is our particular company does not deal in retail pricing, so we're just talking about wholesale pricing. And so that's my experience, what I can speak to. With that, I just would like to say to the author and to the committee that we would like to continue working with the Attorney General's office and the author to try to deal with some of these unintended consequences of the legislation and try to bring it into a form that would be more appropriate and not have some of the unintended consequences. And so I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from Ms. Coble?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
As many of the committee members know, I'm a Pfeiffer, and I've worked at, I still have a problem calling it Flint Hills. I keep calling it Northwest or Coke Oil.
I go back to when you could smoke in the units. Now you can't smoke on the highway going by.
Representative Howes is left.
In the past, Flint Hills has had a rough reputation with people. They have really stepped up to the plate to clean up their operation down there, and if for no other reason than the fact that they have stepped up and really done some things right down there, I'm more than willing to work with the refinery capacity in this state and see if we can come up with a compromise between now and the next committee.
Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, you're going a long ways with this bill. I appreciate all the work you've done on it. That giving a warning makes a lot of sense for small stores. The big stores could thumb their nose at all of us and say they don't care, and $10,000 fine to some big retailers that we both know very well is nothing. They've demonstrated that. So to give that warning, I hope that's in the bill, because I think it'll make a lot of difference for a small guy. They can't afford that $10,000 fine. So appreciate you adding that in.
Representative Nelson.
No, it was Representative Peterson.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to speak to the same point.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Mahoney, any closing comments?
It's a good bill. Vote for it.
Representative Howes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a verbal amendment.
Okay. State your verbal amendment, please, Representative Howes.
Page 1, line 24.
Mm-hmm.
After the word not, insert substantially. I could speak to it, Mr. Chairman.
Please, Representative Howes.
I think it's just clear. It just makes it clearer that, you know, that if it were to be substantially increased, that could be price gouging.
Representative Mahoney, before you respond, could I ask staff to now state, if the amendment passes, what the full sentence would be on lines 1.23 and 1.24? For Vin's clarification?
Mr. Chair and members, it would read as follows. The disparity is not attributable to significant additional costs not within the control of the seller and does not substantially increase the seller's usual and customary profit margin.
Thank you, Mr. Pender. Representative Mahoney.
Chair and President House, it does make the bill a little bit less clear. And colleague in the Capitol that one of the most memorable lines when I was having a fight said, I don't care what you put into the bill, it'll take a court to decide what we really said. So I think we're giving some of that in there. I would ask that you withdraw it. I will work with you, and I think this comes from the small gas retailers, because they asked me somewhat similar before. I'm still trying. I want to try and work with them, because I am more concerned with mom and pop gas stations than I am with anybody else, and how this bill will affect them. I truly understand how shoestring those people operate on, and I do not want to harm them. So I would ask that you withdraw it, and I will catch up with you on the House floor before it goes to the next committee to show you what I'm going to do, if that's okay with you.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, you don't have to catch me before the next committee. I take you at your word that you will contact me before it hits the House floor and that you ironed it out. Mr. Chairman, I'm a little nervous. Well, does not increase the seller's profit margin. I mean, that could be in a penny. And I just need some comfort here. I will withdraw the amendment for now, but I will trust that Representative Mahoney will... We'll work on it in some fashion to make some of us feel a little more comfortable.
Very good. Representative House withdraws the amendment. Representative Benson?
I was just going to speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, any closing statement?
I already made them.
All right. All right, there we go. With that, members, the chair renews his motion that House File 740, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hillstrom. Before we start, Representative Hillstrom, I just want to let you know that our chairman, Mr. Dabney, a very talented chairman of this committee, has decided to take my training wheels off and give me an opportunity to go through this bill with you. And it seems that we are fated, you and I, to be involved in the early stages of my educational process. If you remember, I sat in on a bill that you had introduced, and I received a good experience, so I'm hoping this one will be as well.
I'll be kind to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Hillstrom, I see you have a bill. Would you like the short chair to move that bill for you?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe that it needs to go to the full Commerce Committee next.
Yes. All right. So I move House File 541 be passed and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an A071061 amendment, if you'd also be so kind as to move that to put it in the shape that the author
needs. Right. There is an author's amendment, A071061, and is there any discussion on that bill? I'd move that bill, that amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
All right.
Motion. Opposed? All right.
Motion
prevails. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Give the gavel a whack. Go for it. There we go.
Hey, that's real power.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 541 was brought to me by the Attorney General's Office, and this is a bill that would outlaw posing as another person to harass and defame. This mostly deals with the issue of people going online, creating websites, pretending to be another person. We're seeing it more and more now. And what the amendment did was actually change the penalty from a felony to a gross misdemeanor, making it punishable up to a year in prison and a fine up to $2,000 or both. Because ultimately we don't want to make felons out of kids who are just, think they're just messing around. But with me is the Attorney General, Al Drazil. I have a hard time pronouncing his name every time, who is going to talk to the issue with you. And otherwise, I think we'll be real brief, and then I'll stand for questions. Go ahead.
Mr. Drazil, would you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, my name is, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Al Drazil, and for the record, I'll even spell it for you. It's Z-D-R-A-Z-I-L, so it's spelled nothing like it sounds, which makes it additionally difficult. So, Representative Hillstrom, please don't feel bad. Everybody mispronounces my name, and I'm used to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The Internet has resulted in new ways to harass and defame individuals. In the past, those who engaged in harassment or defamation did so in person, by mail, or over the telephone. This limited the scope and spread of that activity. Today, however, it is cheap and easy to create an Internet profile, a fake Internet profile, on such social networking websites such as MySpace.com, or to send out mass emails pretending to be another person in order to harass or defame. With the Internet, a person posing as another with intent to harass or defame can transmit false information to thousands of individuals. It is additionally difficult to correct the misinformation because there is no way to assure that the correction will reach the individuals that received the original false information. Our office was contacted with such an example. The parents of a 12-year-old told us how their daughter was victimized by a teenage boy who created a false and defamatory website profile of their daughter in which he posed as her, bragging, quote, "I'm a slut," close quote, along with several other untrue but damning statements supposedly made by her. You may also remember hearing about the teacher from Coon Rapids who was victimized by a student who put out a false internet profile where it appeared that the teacher was soliciting sex with young boys. I talked to a prosecutor from Anoka County last week, and she told me how she now has cases where teachers from Fridley and Blaine have also been victimized by false internet profiles, and she also has several juvenile cases where other students have been victimized by their fellow students in this manner. She also talked to me about how difficult it is to fit this behavior into the existing criminal laws of our state. Under current law, it is difficult to prosecute such behavior as identity theft because of the lack of financial motive and the lack of an underlying crime. Our proposal expands the definition of identity theft to include the act of posing as another on the internet with intent to harass or defame another person. It would make such a crime a gross misdemeanor subject to a fine, subject to up to 1 year in jail or a $2,000 fine. And Attorney General Lori Swanson urges passage of this legislation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thank you, Mr. Drizel. Ms. Emerson, since we're separated here by distance and I'm wearing glasses and quite nearsighted, are there any names on the list for questions? Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about what the mechanism is for enforcement of this particular statute.
Representative Swales, thank you. The mechanism for enforcement would be the normal criminal prosecution process. It would be investigated by local law enforcement, the police of the sheriff's department, and then prosecuted by the county attorney, except where city attorneys prosecute those misdemeanors. In incorporated cities, it'd be prosecuted by the city attorney, unless it's a juvenile perpetrator, in which case the county attorney would be incorporated areas, it would be prosecuted by the county.
All right, thank you.
Ms. Zylstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the reasons why the internet does pose a large problem for actually proving harassment as well is because many times you only have one posting. And so it doesn't necessarily reach the level of harassment unless you have more than one instance. But it's out there. Everyone can see it all the time. But one posting can be damaging enough.
Right. Any other questions? Are there any other testifiers? I see only one person sitting out there. Ms. Hillstrom, you don't draw the attention that certain other representatives do.
Not on this bill.
Are there any other individuals to speak to this bill? Any other questions? If not, then I'll move a final motion. I renew the motion for House File 541 to be recommended to pass as amended and to be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Pass.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Oh, all right. The next meeting is March 9th, 10 a.m. and in room 5, SOB office. Adjourn.